Okay, great. So last week we had started our discussion regarding Shavuos and Beis Din nowadays, and the severity of the prohibition, which is one of the Aseres Hadibros, the third one, no seaside, the Shem Hashem Elokecha Lashav, how the entire earth shook when that commandment was given because of the gravity of somebody taking God's name in vain in terms of a false oath. And we spoke about how this gives us a little bit of a context and understanding as to why there really isn't too much oath-taking, if any oath-taking, that takes place in Bat Din nowadays. But we wanted to understand where's the notion come from that you shouldn't even take an oath if it's going to be a truthful oath. So we quoted from the Ksam Sofer, and the Ksam Sofer had a tshuva in which he tried to prove from a pasuk in Koheles that speaks about Hanishpa Kasher Shvua Yarei, that a person who fears taking a Shvua is considered to be on the highest level. And who's the Nishpa? The Nishpa can't be a Chote, can't be somebody who's swearing falsely, because the Pasuk mentioned beforehand the category of Katov Kachote, somebody who's a sinner. So a Nishpa must be just somebody who's prepared to swear, even though they're prepared to swear truthfully, it's still not something that you're supposed to do. And the Sam Sofer claims that the Gemara in Tzmura and Daf Gimel Amud Beis, even though it seems to indicate that you don't get Malkus, for sure, that's what it says, you don't get Malkus for taking an oath if it's going to be a truthful oath, nevertheless, he concludes that it really is still an Isser. It's not something that you're supposed to do, to take an oath ever, and when the Beis Din imposes an oath in a particular situation, it's just to try to get people to be scared. Either that the person who is administering the oath will realize that the one who wants to take it must be telling the truth after all, or the one who realizes that they're about to take a false oath will say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to swear, because they don't want to take a false oath, and that will lead to there being some type of a settlement between the parties, but not that we're actually supposed to take that last step of taking an oath when it's being imposed by the Torah.
When these people are swearing, are they saying, I swear X, or are they swearing that what I'm about to say is true? Is it just
yes,
one
they
statement?
Yes, they say they're swearing that what they're about to say is true. Really, they're swearing in the name of God, and they are swearing that they don't owe the money. They're swearing they don't have the object that's being that was deposited with them, whatever the shvu happens to be.
So they're saying my following testimony is...
That's correct. That's correct. So we mentioned that the Minchas Yitzchak, that's where we left off last time, that the Minchas Yitzchak was asked the question of somebody who wanted to work, take a job in, I think it was Merry Old England, in as a chartered accountant, and the Minchas Yitzchak was asked to respond to this question immediately because this was something where the individual was being given the opportunity of a lifetime. If they would turn it down, then who knows if they would ever get the chance again. And there were a number of problems with respect to the job that was being offered. But the first one was that they would have to take oaths day in and day out, up and down and upside down. Every single situation that occurred, they would have to start off by taking a solemn oath. And they wanted to know if it was okay to take the job, if they would have to constantly take oaths. And the Minchas Yitzchak said, absolutely not. Then it turned out that the person was able to renegotiate the terms of the position so that they wouldn't have to take oaths. So then it was just the question, is there a receiver problem if they're going to get Jews into trouble? Is there a problem of our calls if they have to go into the courts and this involves a Jew and things of that variety? So there were other issues that the Minchas Yitzchak discussed. But he spent a long time in this issue. He said, don't take the job if you're going to have to take a number of, if you're going to have to take a lot of oaths. And he went back to this tshuva of the Chassam Sofer, of this idea that the Chassam Sofer said that even truthful oaths are problematic, and he wanted to revisit the issue.
There may be litigation in secular courts, but he wouldn't be doing it on his own. It'd be as a representative of the government.
He would still have to take oaths with respect to the veracity of his work and what he had investigated. So he would have to personally still take oaths.
The truth of that was a problem. Wouldn't matter for
that.
He felt that he'd be facilitating it. What?
These oaths were written or oral?
These were oral oaths. So it was more problematic. Yeah. There's a Rabbi Kivega that speaks about whether written oaths are on the same level, but certainly oral oaths, that's the major problem when you're going to take a verbal oath. Yeah.
So it's a written oath, it's not acceptable either.
Right? It's less problematic. So the Minchas Yitzchak said that he thinks that this is not just the Chumah B'Alma, but it's Meikra D'Dina, And he says that the Chassam Sofer struggled to come up with a makor, and so he came up with this pasuk in Koheles and so forth. But he says that if you look in the Tanayim and in the Gemaras, you see from the Yerushalmi in Shavuos, in Perek Vav of Maseches Shavuos, says that we learn the Bein Zaka Ben Chayev L'Dei Mume Lo Teor, that whether you're innocent or whether you're guilty, you should never take a Shavuos. So the Yerushalmi is pretty explicit. He says you don't need to darshan a pasuk in Koheles the way it was never darshan before. You could do that. Chassam Sofer was capable of doing that, but he said we have an explicit Talmud Yerushalmi that says that you should never take an oath. That it's very explicit. It talks about cases where a person took an oath where they were convinced that what they were saying was truthful, but it turns out that unbeknownst to them, it really wasn't truthful. The case in the Yerushalmi was a woman who had these diamonds that were on her. And they spilled into the dough of a friend of hers. She was baking some challahs in her. They had a challah baking party, I guess. So she went to her friend's house. They're baking some dough, and she's missing her diamonds. And because they fell out of her dough, they were sort of on the side of her sheet, and they fell into the dough of her friend. And her friend didn't know it. So now the neighbor who had the diamonds comes to the friend and says, "I think you have my diamonds. And I want my diamonds back." And the friend said, "I don't know what you're talking about. Take a shavua." Said, "I don't know why she decided to take this." Sometimes people can be very dramatic when they have these types of interactions. So the friend said, "My son should die if it turns out that I have your diamonds, that I know anything about your diamonds." And then her son died. And then people said, because it turned out the diamonds were in the dough, but she didn't know that the diamonds were in the dough. And then she heard people talking, saying, it turns out that she must have sworn falsely, because otherwise her son wouldn't have died, because she said only if she has the diamonds should her son die. So then she said, "My other son should die if I have the diamonds," because she didn't like the fact that people were speaking badly about her, that they thought that this was proof that she had taken a false oath, and her other son died. Because it turned out that she really had the diamonds. The Gemara in Maseches Gittin in the Babli has a different version of this story. I think a Daf Lamed Hei Amud Aleph in Maseches Gittin says that there was an almana who had a deposit of a very fancy diamond that was given to her by somebody, by a wealthy individual. And she was asked to watch after this item. And then the wealthy individual came to the almana and said, "I want it back." And she said, "I don't have it anymore." And then she said, I don't want you to think that I stole it. It got lost. I feel very bad that it got lost." But she said, "I take a shavua that my son should die, the one of my sons should die." This was only one son in the story of Maseches Gittin. "If I got any benefit whatsoever out of this diamond." So she was a little bit more careful. At least she knew that she didn't get any benefit. It wasn't a question of was it in her possession. She didn't get any benefit from the diamond. So then her son died. Why did her son die? Because it turned out that the diamond had fallen into one of her challahs, and there was a poor person who came to the door and asked for some food. So she gave the poor person the challah. So because of the fact that she had the diamond in the challah, so therefore it was puffed up a little bit more, so it looked nicer. Presumably she also got the benefit that it was a much bigger gift of tzedakah than she had imagined that she gave to the poor person. The explanation is given that it was more puffy because of the fact that it had the diamond in it. So even if the poor person never recognized that there was a diamond, it looked more presentable. So she did get more benefit from the diamond, and as a result, her child died. So from all of these stories, we see that, says the concludes, the Talmud Yerushalmi, don't take an oath. Even if you think that you're taking a truthful oath, that you don't know what the story really is. There may be circumstances that you're not familiar with, so never take an oath. So he says this is all a discussion when it is a question of the fact that a person might decide that they're not going to take an oath, and as a result of not taking an oath, they're going to lose out on some money, because a claim is being made against them and they don't want to take an oath, and as a result they're going to be chayav to pay more money, that if they're not nishba, that eino rotzeh lishava yishalem, they're going to have to pay the money. So that we have to find the makor for this idea, don't take an oath even though you're going to lose money. So for that, need a makor. But he said, I don't need a makor, I don't need a source for the idea that you shouldn't take an oath when it's not going to cause you to lose any money. He says, that's pashut. So he says, in this case, the person's not going to lose any money, so he won't have this beautiful job opportunity in which they're going to be able to have tremendous honor and prestige. But the person will still have a panasa, they'll still be able to make money. They're not going to lose money as a result of not taking this job. So he says, so in this situation, for sure, I don't need a makor. He says that's what the Gemara in the Devarim speaks about in Daf Tesam, and I went on the top of page 5 now in the source materials, where it speaks about Nidrei Rishayim. It speaks about the Nidarim that are taken by Rishayim. He says those are people who just take Nidarim indiscriminately without any reason whatsoever, and they're just constantly bowing and they're constantly taking oaths. So this is going to lead invariably to a takala. It's going to lead to some type of a pitfall if a person's constantly doing it. Because Altihila Olam Alti Rogil Nidarim, the Gemara says, and Daf Kofam and based in Nidarim, Shesovka Limo B'Shavuos. If you're constantly taking vows and the like, eventually you're going to violate a Shavuah. And that's going to be very, very chomor. Like we said, Lo Yenaket. Person is never cleansed, they're never fully atoned for when they take a false oath, and therefore you don't want to put yourself into that category. And then he quotes from the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos, we mentioned last week that the Rambam is the one authority who seems to say, we have the Machlokas Rambam and Ramban, so the Rambam is the preeminent authority who says that sometimes it is a mitzvah. Sometimes it is a mitzvah to take a shavua. So he says, even the Rambam says that if it's a situation where there is no need to take a shavua, you're putting yourself in a position where you don't need to take a shavua, so then that's a losase. So then he says that is a violation of a negative commandment. That even the Rambam agrees, like the Ramban had said, that would be a prohibition according to the Rambam as well. So therefore, he says that even according to the Rambam, you're going to have a problem with taking this particular position. But then he goes off in a digression, which is a worthwhile digression, just to touch upon, about how he was surprised. We mentioned last week he was surprised that the Chassam Sofer didn't mention anything about this very foundational machlokis between the Rambam and the Ramban as to whether there's ever a mitzvah to take a shvuah. The Rambam said sometimes it's a mitzvah to take a shvuah. The Ramban said there's no such thing. Sometimes it's a rishus. Sometimes you have the right paper to take a shvuah. You're not going to get lashes for it, but it's never a mitzvah to take a shvuah. So he points out that there are different ways of understanding the shita of the Rambam. So even the Rambam himself. The Shvuah L'Kayim is a mitzvah. We say that's, if you take a Shvuah, the way the Ramban understood it, was if you're going to take a Shvuah, then you have to make sure that you have all of the midos that are described by the Torah that are necessary, as Hashem HaKachatira, the Osu Savo, the Vosidbach, in order to take a Shvuah, that you can do it under those circumstances, but only if you have all of these very high polluting qualities that make you an exemplary individual. And even then, he said, the nature of taking a shavua under those circumstances is ubishmoti shaveh. If you are going to take a shavua under those circumstances, so swear in the name of God and don't swear in the name of other deities. But not necessarily that it's something which is promoted, saying if you're going to do it, So then you have to ensure that you're going to avoid all of these obstacles and pitfalls. But not that we tell you it's a mitzvah that you better do it. Okay, so it's not going to be an aveira if you do it. But the main mitzvah is that when you're going to do it, you have to do it properly. That's what he says. Like you're going to chef. You don't have a mitzvah to chef per se. You're going to chef. So make sure that you cut both the trachea and the esophagus. And make sure that you cleanse out the animal of all of its blood, and make sure that you salt it and do all of these things. But it's not that there's a special mitzvah, oh, go out and shecht an animal. So he says that's how the Ramban learns. It's not necessarily. So the question is, does the Rambam really learn differently? So he quotes the Radbaz. He quotes the Radbaz. This is in the middle of the page. You have the Zayin in the page, where the Radbaz says that the idea of the Rambam is, you look at the bold part, if you happen to be in Beis Din, not that you're necessarily taking a Shavuah to do a mitzvah, for other of you, you're in Beis Din, you're in a Beis Din proceeding, in the sky of Shavuah be Beis Din. So in this specific instance, that's when the Rambam says it's a mitzvah lishava, that you shouldn't feel that you're obligated to abstain from taking the shvuah and to lose money. In this case, we say, no, if you're placed in that situation and you're telling the truth, so then it's going to be a mitzvah to take a shvuah under those circumstances. But it's not necessarily the case that otherwise the Rambam is saying that there is a mitzvah. It's only in that very limited circumstances that there is a mitzvah to take a shvuah. And then he says that the Megillas Esther, who was one of the main perushim in the Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvos, he says there are really three different chilukim according to the Rambam. If there's a tzorech, meaning that the person is in the middle of a Bezdin proceeding and they are telling the truth and they're pushed against the wall to take a shvuah and they're going to take a truthful shvuah, so then it's a mitzvah seseh. If it's not a tzorech kokach, meaning let's say you're taking a shvuah to be mekayim a mitzvah, it's not that the Bezdin is saying you must take a shvuah otherwise you're going to lose money. Okay, so then if you have all of the qualities that are enumerated in the pasuk, you call it tanoim, amuvarim, medrash rabba, v'tankumba, you have all of these special qualities. You're a God-fearing person on the level of the most God-fearing people in the history of the world, like Avraham and Eov and Yosef. Those are examples of individuals who are referred to as special Yirei Elokim in the various psukim. Okay, so then you could take that type of a shvua. That's more of a rishus. And if there's no tzorech at all, you're just taking a shvua. I swear that I'm going to eat lunch at your house next Shabbos. So then that's an aveir. So those are the three different categories that even the Rambam would agree to.
Well, but in Bezdin's no general shvua, mitzvah to make a shvua to the truth, only
that
it's a shvua
like you were a watch person and you say that the object got lost or something like that, so you have to take a shvua to show him sheino b'shuso, that you weren't shleach yad, you weren't posheya. So that type of situation, you were modeh b'mikzas, you have to take a shvua. There's an eid echad who testifies against you, so you have to take a shvua. Those types of circumstances.
I think that would be a mitzvah to say, though, if even, you know, even in any regards, maybe it should be just allowed. But why call it a mitzvah to say to take a shvua at that point? Because everything until now has been not to take a shvua.
That's right. So he's saying in these letters, when the Rambam says that there's a mitzvah seseh, because the Rambam does say it, so the Megillah says the limits it in this particular way. But then he says that there's another commentary on the Rambam, this commentary that's known as the Kinas Sofer. Anybody who learns the Sefer Mitzvahs of the Rambam, so they find all of these very fascinating, very elaborate commentaries that have a lot to say. They're very intellectually stimulating, but people don't learn the Sefer Mitzvos of the Rambam so much. But if you did, you'd be familiar with these various commentaries. So another one is called the Kinas Sofrim. The Kinas Sofrim says that really there's not so much of a difference between the Rambam and the Ramban. That really when the Rambam talks about that there's a mitzvah to take a shvua, that just means that there's a mitzvah that when you are in a situation that the Torah says that there's such a thing as a shvuah's bezdin, uvishmalti shaveh, you should take the shvuah in God's name and not take it lo b'shem zulaso. Look at the last line of the page. That you should take it in God's name and not in anyone else's name. And he compares it to the case of the shkita that we just spoke about. You're going to shek, so you have to shek in a particular fashion. So that's how the Kinas Sofrim understands the Rambam, really on the very, very similar lines as the Ramban, because he says that, let's say, that you are in this type of situation where you had to take a shavuos hashomim, for example, and you said, I don't want to take a shavuos hashomim. I'll pay the money anyway. I was a shomim sachar and the object got stolen. And if I take a shavuah, I was a shomim chinam, excuse me, I was a shomim chinam and the object got stolen. If I take a shavuah that the object got stolen, so then I'm off the hook. But if I don't take a shvuah, so then I may have to pay. So I say, if a person doesn't want to take a shvuah, so then we say, yishalim, yishalim, so then he'll take a shvuah. So he says that where do we find that that's an aveira? Do we find this in aveira? A person says, I don't want to take a shvuah, I'll pay anyway. Like the Shnayas in Parakamav could say, he doesn't want to take a shvuah, so he's going to pay. So we say that's an aveira, it's not an aveira. So we see even that the Rambam would subscribe to the notion that you're not obligated. It's not like a mitzvah, an affirmative mitzvah, that you must take a shvuah. It's if you take a shvuah, so then there are certain protocols that would need to be followed. And he quotes from the Yerushalmi that we quoted. He said, it appears from the Yerushalmi, because the Yerushalmi is in the context of there being a machlokis between Rabbi Yonah and Rabbi Yossi, about when we say that it's problematic to take a shvuah. So Rabbi Yonah says, yeah, if you're taking a shvuah, al sheker. If you're taking it with respect to a shvuah sheker, you're saying a false oath, so of course that's problematic. And Rabbi Yossi says, no, even to take a shvuah al emes, even if you're going to take a shvua honestly, so that also is going to be a problem. And then it has the story of this woman who thought that she was taking a shvua that was a truthful shvua, and she had her sons die because it turned out that she was under a misimpression. So he says that we see from the final conclusion of the Yerushalmi that apala emes ika iser, that there's an iser even with respect to taking a shvuas emes, that it's something that you're obligated to really refrain from, and that he thinks that, and the kinnas sofrim comes to the conclusion that even the Rambam would agree to that you should avoid even a shvuas emes. And the Rambam's just talking about if you do take a shvuas, so it's a mitzvah to do it in the right way, that you should follow the right protocol when you're going to take a shvuas. And then he quotes from a Kesef Mishnah, you look in where the paragraph that begins your base, who says that even if I understand the Rambam more along the lines of the Megillas Esther, that there is an actual mitzvah to take a shvua when you're in a Beis Din proceeding and you're telling the truth, that's only if you're a Yorei Hashem. That's not like only in the second intermediate category when it's a shvuas reshus that we say that you need all of the qualities of being an osa, but you need those qualities even to take a shvua in the context of a Beis Din proceeding. But otherwise, if you're not a yet Yorei Hashem, so then the Rambam would never say that it was a mitzvah. So as a bottom line, after reviewing all these sources, he says, no, now we can understand, I guess, why the Kesam Sofer didn't quote the Machlokas Rambam and Ramban. Because according to certain sources, certainly the Kinnas Sofer, there isn't really much of a Machlokas. Even the Rambam would agree with this proposition that it is never a mitzvah really to take a shvua. So he says, Ve'olam Yisrael, Ve'olach Olamai said, Da'afim Niskayev, Shvua Bebezden, Ve'mitzvah Shloli Shava, Filu Be'emes. That even if you're obligated to take a shvua in Beis Din, it really is a mitzvah not to take a shvua, even if you think that you're telling the truth. You want to say like the Kesef Mishnah, okay, according to the Kesef Mishnah, it's a mitzvah if you are one of the Hasidei Ador. You're one of the most righteous people in the generation. Who here in this room is prepared to say, Ra'ika Ana, that I'm one of the most righteous people in the generation? Right? It's not such a simple thing to say. And even with respect to this approach, let's say, of the Kesef Mishnah, the other poskim, like the Kinnas Sofrim, disagree. The Kinnas Sofrim, Kamarabam Sfirulan came, that it's never a mitzvah. About Shalobah, Rishas Tzorach, Yisurah Rabbah, Ika Lishava. When it comes to Shalolah Tzorach, so all the poskim agree that even according to the Rambam, when there's no need whatsoever, like they used to do in the time of Yanai HaMelech, that people would just take gratuitous oaths that they were going to eat or not eat each other in each other's house, or they're taking an oath that they're 100% positive that this person is going to win the election, or that this horse is going to win the race, or that this team is going to win the game, when they would take shvuas of that sort, or that I take a shvua, that was the most amazing catch in the history of football, or shvuas, like, you know, absolute the ludicrous shvuas that people take all the time. So that, he says, if for sure everybody would agree according to the Rambam that is an avera chamura. And then, finally, he tops off the entire discussion by saying, so to put yourself in that position, even if it's a plum job, putting yourself in this position where you're going to have to take a shvua all the time when nobody is putting you on the witness stand, nobody is suing you in court, and nobody is putting you in a sin. You don't have a situation where you need to reinforce your commitment to doing a mitzvah so that you're going to take a shvua to perform a mitzvah. You're just going to be machnis yourself into a job in which you're going to have to be swearing day and night. So he says, that's crazy. That according to the Rambam, for sure that's going to be Asur. So therefore, take a look at source Yudalad. So therefore, in reference to your position, your chartered accountant position, that you bothered me to stay up all night because you need an answer right away, the Kabbalah Mitzvah Kazu, in order for you to take a position of this sort, she'd start the Shavu B'chol Pam U'Pam, that you're going to have to swear up and down and all around, Lo Mi Baya L'Poskim Achokim Al-Rambam L'Akla Rambam. So therefore, I don't have to make it into a Machlokas Rambam and Ramban. The Rambam would also agree, Isurika, this is a major prohibition. Mikoshikein, especially with you, he says, I know you. You're a Gevir, come on. The Yesh Baruch Hashem Panasa Belozeh. The reason they asked this fellow to be such a fancy schmancy accountant for the government, because he's very good, he's probably making a lot of money even without this. He says, you have a very fine panos even without this. He says, nothing doing, you shouldn't take this job if you are going to have to take shavuos all of the time. So, that is the general sentiment which is expressed, as we see even in contemporary tshuva, sort of drawing from the Qassam Sofer, we are not muting at all. The position taken by the Qassam Sofer over the generations, if anything, if you look in the halakhic literature, and certainly if you look at the practice in the Batei Din, we have only amplified this idea, amplified this practice of trying to avoid taking any shavuos whatsoever. So the Shulchan Aruch, you look in Source Yud Gimel, and Siman Pei Zayin, which is the main siman in Shulchan Aruch that deals with the whole institution of shavuos altogether. So it says, Komi Shnisqayav Shavua, Bein Shel Torah, Bein Shel Divrayim, Afilu Hases, if a person is obligated to take a shavua, Yesh Lo Lahakamim Stam, Konim Shisha, V'Komai Shetoin Alav, Tova Sheinu Chayibo, Kedei Le'ashpio Chinam. So in order to try to avoid any kind of situation that where a person is going to be put on the spot to take a shavua, so Shulchan Aruch has various coping mechanisms. One coping mechanism is that you're going to impose a chayr on sort of the general audience and all the other Baalei Din. If anybody is going to say something that's going to require you, according to Torah law, rabbinic law, to make a shavua, and it's not really warranted, it's not really genuine, they're making up the whole thing, so then they should be put in chayrim. So that's something that worked up until a certain point in time, but as the Prisha mentions, and I'll jump a little bit, you look at the Prisha in... Hold on. Anybody who can find me the Prisha, so we'll jump to the Prisha. You look at the Prisha in Source Lamed. Okay, I'm jumping a long way to page 10. So the Prisha Drisha, also known as the Sma, Rabbi Yeshua Falk, so he says that imposing Charamim nowadays is not as effective as it used to be. A lot of things are not as effective as they used to be. When Spinoza came out with his pantheistic philosophy, so he was placed by the Chachamim of Amsterdam, they put him into a Charam, and he didn't really pay too much attention. It wasn't something that really had as much of an effect because you had more secularist people who were assimilated who didn't really care as much about the chayrim of the Chachamim. So it says the Drisha, Maram Kasav, the Drisha was writing this before the whole Spinoza incident, the Bizman Azesh and Niduyim Mikokolim, that the Niduyim, that people don't take Chachamim so seriously, and also everybody's putting everybody else in chayrim. Somebody showed me a sign today with a very illustrious Rabbanim Poskim, Tamnei Chachamim in our community, saying these people are causing women to marry as an ishus ish because they're endorsing protest rallies, and every get given subject to a protest rally we all know is batul b'butul, and they have big pictures of big Tamnei Chachamim, and that you have and somebody sent me a picture of a person hanging this big poster on top of their roof so that everybody who passes by can see the poster hanging. And I was asked by one of my cohorts at the Chicago Rabbinical Council, hey, how come you're not on the poster? Don't you rank to be on the poster too? It's not any more necessarily considered to be shameful or disgraceful, depending on who is imposing the chayrim and how much respect you have for them. So therefore, says the Drisha, ei menad in the chomi shiroi menados. We don't really put people in the chayrim anymore. Apa veris gedolos v'chamus. Even if it's apikorsis, other major averus that are violated, therefore, he says that's not something that's really done nowadays. That's all people will do tshuva, etc. Various considerations mentioned by the Drisha. This is in Siman Shin Lamed Daled in Yoredeya, which is the siman that talks all about putting people into chayrim. So that's not necessarily going to work to have the necessary chilling effect for other litigants not to make the types of claims that would impose upon somebody a shavuah. The Shulchan Aruch says something else in that siman as well. Siman Pei Zayin Sif Lamed Zayin says, Ein Moser in Shavuah, Mamisha Ratz Achar Shavuah. That we don't have a shavuah taken by somebody who seems to be in a big rush to take a shavuah. Somebody who can't wait to take a shvuah. Oh, me, call me, I want to take a shvuah. So if a person seems to be a little bit too eager, a little bit too much of an eager beaver to take a shvuah, so we say that's not a good thing. Even if you wanted to say it might be a mitzvah, it might be a reshus, you should feel very bad that you are being put on the spot, that there could be an earthquake, you're going to do the wrong thing, that you have to be in this compromised position where you have to be in such an elevated state to be worthy of taking a shavua, and everything has to be 100% that comes out of your mouth, 100% correct, and otherwise it could lead to such terrible pitfalls and catastrophic results, the worst type of punishments that don't apply to other types of aveiros, etc. So therefore, says the Shulchan Aruch, somebody seems to be too eager to take a shvua. We don't allow them. We don't allow them to take a shvua in that situation. Look at the Piskei Tshuva source test above over here on that sif in Siman Pei Zayin, going over to the top of page 7. So Kasav is safe for Shah Mishpah, so he quotes the Shah Mishpah on the Shulchan Aruch, who says, perish. Here already we have this concept of what Bati Din generally do are supposed to do nowadays, to say, therefore, you even in a situation where a shvua has been imposed, where a person has not refrained from taking a shvua because of their fright, like the Tzam Sofer writes of taking a shvua, like the Ron wrote that we're afraid that a worker is not going to want to take a shvua to collect his money because a person just doesn't want to take a shvua altogether. So he says that therefore, the way in which we address this situation, the Bezdin might not allow the person to take a shvua. Bezdin says, you seem like you're a little bit too eager to take a shvua, therefore you fail the test, you fail the shvua test. So what does the Bezdin do? It makes a pshara. It says, okay, since there was a shvua that was imposed, you are prepared to take the shvua. We're going to take that into account, but we're also letting you off the hook. We're going to take that into account, so we're going to discount the claim accordingly. If you were taking the shvua, maybe you would have gotten off the hook entirely. You are prepared to take the shvua, so we'll let you get off the hook 1/3. We'll let you get off the hook a little bit. How much should we let them get off the hook? So that's the discussion that follows. And the interesting thing is that the Torah, you look in source Tez Zayin, he's talking about the laws of Pshara. The Torah says that at a certain point in time, when the Bezdin rules, this is the absolute ruling. Reuven owes Shimon $100 or whatever it is. If part of the ruling is, Reuven owes Shimon $100 unless Reuven takes a Shvuah. And that's the ruling. There was a Shvuah Hesses, there was a Modem Mixes, whatever it was. And the Bezdin says, the money is going to be owed unless the Shvuah is taken. So that's the final din. So we have a general rule that once the final judgment has been rendered by the Bezdin, then no longer is the Bezdin allowed to suggest a pshara. They can't say, oh, we're going to actually make a compromise at this point in time. If you have already issued the judgment, then you can't tamper or tweak the judgment anymore from the standpoint of the Bezdin to say, oh, well, if we have authority to make a pshara, so instead of saying the Reuven has to pay $100, it's only going to have to pay $60. No, you can't do that anymore. Once you've issued the decision, so then Yikov Adin HaZahar, that's the final story, you can't adjust it anymore. But there's the Torah, there's one exception. What's the exception? Miu. Take a look at the second line in source Tez Zayin, O Miu Miyei Shvua Beinayim. If part of the judgment is that Reuven has to take a Shvua, Vashayim La'asos Pshara Beinayim, Afilu Yachag Mardin. Even after the final judgment has been handed down, the Bach, in source Yud Zayin and Simon Yud Beis, it says, nah, that was misunderstood. That was an opinion of Tosfos, but that was based on the fact that Tosfos says that generally Bezdin is not allowed to impose a pshara when they're ready to announce the judgment, even though they haven't done it yet. But if you've already announced the judgment, so Tosfos said, however, when it comes to imposing a pshara in lieu of somebody taking a shvua, so that can be done even at that point in time. But that's before an actual judgment has been rendered. But if the judgment has been rendered itself, so the Bach says, at that point in time, it's going to be too late. But how does the Shulchan Aruch paskin? Does the Shulchan Aruch paskin like the Torah? Or does the Shulchan Aruch paskin like the Bach? We like the Bach, of course. Why do we like the Bach, everybody? Because he was a big time Chacham. But he was also one of my ancestors from my mother's father's side. So we're very proud of the fact that we come from the Bach. And the Bach certainly, you know, holds this position, and we have to take it very, very seriously. But the Shulchan Aruch doesn't seem to hold like the Bach. The Shulchan Aruch says, Mimchayvu Bezdin Shvua Le'echad Mehem. The Shulchan Aruch, of course, came before the Bach, but the Shulchan Aruch says that if the Bezdin was Mechayev HaShvua, Vashaya Bezdin Lasas Pshara Binem Didipatim Eonesh HaShvua. The Bezdin is allowed to make a Pshara even after the Gemar Din. If you look at the Shach in Source Kaf on page 8, the Shach says, Vashaya Bezdin Lasas Pshara, going on this ruling of the Shulchan Aruch, he says, Gamikan Kosova Bach, he says that the Bach had said, according to the view of Tosos, once the judgment has been rendered, then it's too late to make a pshara, even with respect to getting people out of a shavua, once the judgment has been rendered. And he said, says the Shach, very strong language over here, and you have to realize that in Shulchan Aruch, one principle that I learned from my Rebbe, from Rav Herschel Shechter Shlita, who was just here for Shabbos, is that we generally will always follow the Shach. When there's a Machlokes Shach and other people, the Shach usually wins. And you know from whom I originally learned that principle, is when I was learning Hilchos Nida with none other than the father of Rav Herschel Shechter, namely Rav Melech Shechter, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, was Rav Melech Shechter, who we would learn Hilchos Nida with him and say, I'm not even going to bother doing the Tazis for the most part because we always pass like the Shach. So that's why I learned this principle of that we've always passed like the Shach. It's not always 100%, but you know, very often, says the Shach, Be'ein Drav Nechodim. Says, don't agree. We don't agree. We don't agree because Kam Chumr Zeh Kulei. It's going to be a kulu, because what's going to be the result of the fact that the Bezdin is not going to, it's not going to adjust the obligation of taking the Shavua and transform that into a pshara, into a settlement that's going to be imposed upon the parties. Well, you would have had to take a Shavua, so instead we're going to monetize that into a certain amount of money. So as a result, people will actually take Shavuas. That's going to be a kulu. That's going to be a bad thing. It's going to be a big leniency in terms of allowing oaths, and allowing oaths is not necessarily such a good thing. As a general rule, the reason why we don't want to adjust the din when there has been a ruling by the Bezdin is because it's a zilusa de beidina. It's zilusa de beidina. Go back to page 7 in source Yud Zayin at the very last two lines of the Bach. What's the Bach concerned about? If I'm going to transform a judgment of the Bezdin to require shavuos into a pshara that's going to be imposed by the Bezdin, he says the kevan tekvar gemar gamru adin lipsok shavua. Since the din has already been paskened to require a shavua, it's going to look like zilusa de beidina im chozim adayonim. Now the Dayanim say, no, change that mind. Don't take the Shavua. Instead, you'll just pay this certain amount. You don't have to pay everything because you're willing to take a Shavua, but you have to pay a little bit. No. Nira kilo donu din emes. Then it's going to look like the final conclusion is not the truthful din because they already issued the din and now they're changing their minds. They're changing the din. So it looks like it's not the real McCoy that we're getting over here. And that's why the box is nachon lahakmir. So I saw in the Sefer, Sohar HaMishpat, which is a very, very fine Sefer on Koshim Mishpat, written by a Chabad Tamakokam, that was published maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. I like it because he quotes me in a couple of places. So Sohar HaMishpat, this is a very, very good Sefer. He says, Ein Zilusa de Beidina, Kedei Lisnatsa Me'onesh Shavua. He says, the reason why over here we're passing like the Shach against the Bach is we agree with the Bach. You shouldn't engage in a zilusa de beit dina. But it's not a zilusa de beit dina to get out of a shvua. He says getting out of a shvua is not still me on a shvua. We want to save everybody from the punishment of taking oaths. So that's not something that is going to cast aspersions on the Bezdin or the judgment that was issued by the Bezdin. I'm sorry, Lev. Yes.
The Bezdin
initiates the pshara, and we're going to talk about exactly the parameters of that pshara in just a moment, so it's an excellent question for you to ask at this point in time, because that's exactly what I wanted to go to over here in terms of this long Piskei Tshuva, which we won't spend so much time on, because we really want to finish today, which is source Yud Tes on the second half of page 7. But first, Larry had a question. Hmm? Yes, you had your hand raised before.
Yeah, but you actually, the next thing you said was about whether... Oh,
so I answered your question?
Yeah, because I thought if you don't issue the adjustment, once you've made a adjustment in your mind, you can't.
Ah, okay, very good.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Does
Bezdin ever allow someone to affirm instead of swear? Or that means nothing in Bezdin?
Doesn't mean anything. We have certain things they do. Every single time that a person renders testimony, it is considered to be an affirmation. So we have people just render the testimony, not under oath. So that's an affirmation. By definition, it's considered to be an affirmation. It doesn't matter if they add the word Eifah. So the Piskei Tshuva in source Yud Tes talks about a tshuva of the Shavus Yaakov, which is a very interesting thing because he has two tshuvas of the Shavus Yaakov. Rav Yaakov Reischer, a big posek, and Piskei Tshuva quotes him a lot. So the two tshuvas of the Shavus Yaakov, interestingly enough, got conflated. It got conflated. One of them deals with Shavus. He says that there was a pshara that the Bezdin made between two partners who had a dispute, And one of the partners is very upset about the way that the Beis Din paskened it, because there were various oaths that Reuven, who's the one who's upset at the Beis Din, was obligated to take, and various shvuos that Shimon was obligated to take. And the Beis Din made a pshara, but whenever it is that they said, okay, Reuven, you're going to be off the hook for this shvua, and we're going to require you to pay a lot of money for the fact that we're exempting you from the shvua. And when it came to Shimon, and the shvuas that Shimon was obligated to take, they said, oh, Shimon, so you would have had to take the shvua, and we're letting you up, so therefore you're going to have to pay us a couple of nickels. You have to pay a couple of nickels to the other side. So Reuven said, wait a second, when I got exempt from an oath for pshara, so I had to pay like 10,000 rubles. And when you let Shimon off the hook, instead of taking the shvua, so you let him get away with a couple of nickels. So what's going on over here? So therefore, Aitina says, Reuven, that this entire judgment is corrupt, and it should be nullified. So says that the Shvus Yaakov, that claim does not wash. Says that claim does not wash. And this is a very important principle that is articulated by the Shvus Yaakov, which is that the value of a Shvu is really going to depend on all of the circumstances. Take a look at the bold-faced print, the second bold paragraph. Or segment that I have in the Pesukei Teshuva, Beheshiv the Taina Achas Rishon Hashav Reuven, the first Taina, Lav Klumi Levatel Kocha Pesach Shnas Tevikinyan. The Dayanei Apesach Yecholim Tires Tevayim, because the Dayanei can say as follows: Shekapivos Enam Lo Yev Shav Reuven Nishav Adror. I should start Pinyon High for the Shvuah. So Reuven would not have been able to take the truthful Shvuah. They saw, based on the circumstances, that the truth did not seem to be in Reuven's direction. So when they let Reuven off of taking a shvua, so therefore that is worth a lot of money from the perspective of Reuven, not to have to take a shvua that otherwise would have been in a false shvua anyway. But on the other hand, the Beis Din saw that Shimon's story seemed to might be much more truthful and much more on the up and up. And therefore, they came to the conclusion that it wasn't worth as much to Shimon to let Shimon off the hook from taking a shvuah, because it was very clear that Shimon could have easily taken a shvuah under the circumstances, because he was, in all likelihood, telling the truth, because what he had to say completely added up. So that's Shvus Yaakov number one. Then the Pesukei Teshuva goes on, he has Shvus Yaakov number two. And he says, when a Beis Din has to make a pshara, and generally speaking nowadays, the nature of a pshara, we spoke about pshara, the nature of pshara that Beis Din makes is what we call pshara klovel adin. If they make a pshara, you make a compromise, but you don't go to the opposite of what the halakha would have provided. You say, the halakha would have provided X, so we're going to do X minus 1/3 in terms of making a pshara. He says, if you've got to do a pshara, it's a pshara klovel adin. We make a pshara, which is within the ballpark of what the strict halakha would have required anyway. So he says, what's considered to be within the ballpark? So he says, within the ballpark is considered to be pakos mishlish. Pakos shlish. He says, within 1/3, so you make an adjustment of up to 1/3 or less or more than what you would have decided otherwise, so that's considered to be pshara klovel adin. So points out the Divrei Malkiel in Source Club Base, now on page 8, Divrei Malkiel says that what happened is that over the years, people made a little bit of a chulent, or a Reese's peanut butter cup sandwich, or whatever, with respect to these two different Shvus Yaakovs that are quoted by the Pesukei Teshuva. Because at the beginning, he said, the Shvuos are a little bit fungible in terms of how you monetize or value a Shvuah from a Beis Din perspective. And the second half of the Shvuah, he says, wasn't talking about Shvuos at all. Just whatever you make a Pshara, so an adjustment up to 1/3 is considered to be a good Pshara. So he said, what ended up happening is that Beis Din said, Reuven would have had to take a Shvuah, we're letting him off the hook. He would have taken a Shvuah, letting him off the hook. So therefore, he should pay 1/3 of Shimon's claim. He would have been off the hook 100%. He'd take a Shvuah. But now we're letting him off the hook from the Shvuah. So therefore, he should pay 1/3 of Shimon's claim. And we're going to evaluate it at 1/3. He says, the Shvus Yaakov never said that. He never said that you evaluate Shvuos at 1/3 of the price of more than what the person would have otherwise gotten off the hook from paying. He says, Umashikasov, take a look at the source code base and the bold face print. Umashikasov, Hashvus Yaakov, the Karladin, Hainu Shlish Pachos. He says, Lo Shayakan. He says, that's not applicable to a situation where you're letting off the hook, letting somebody off the hook from taking a Shvuah. The Shamayi below Shvuah. That aspect, that shvua of the Shvus Yaakov is talking about without a shvua. The name Minagad Yonim is the Kainim Lasek's Be'at Shvua Elach Shlish Be'at Taina. He said that the old Zakedim, you have to certainly respect the old Zakedim, but he said the old Zakedim adopted this minog of evaluating an exemption from shvua at 1/3 of the claim. But now, of a Be'emis Lodomi, the Shamayri below shvua. He says that you were mixing and matching two different parts of the Shus Yaakov. Really, he said, is what the Shus Yaakov really said is that it could be complete opposite extremes. The Bezdin can evaluate an exemption of a Shvua for one person as really not changing the merits of what they're entitled to one iota or only by a couple of pennies. And for somebody else, it could be a huge, huge difference if the Bezdin really comes to the conclusion that this person wasn't really telling the truth altogether. So this becomes really the difficulty that the Bati Din are faced with in terms of how do you go about evaluating a Shvua in any given case when a person is not going to take a Shvua, when you're not even going to allow somebody to take a Shvua. To what degree does it play out altogether in contemporary Bezdin proceedings? So I gave you an example. Again, source of Chof Aleph over here on page 8, I gave you an example from the Tzitz Eliezer. Tzitz Eliezer, of course, sat in the Bezdin Agadol in Yerushalayim, Rav Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg. There are many Shuvas that are authored by the Tzitz Eliezer together with, for example, of Obadiah Yosef and the other luminous personalities that sat as Dayanim in the Bezdin Agadol in Eretz Yisrael. And the Tzitz Eliezer had a case where there was basically a modeh b'mitzvos type of situation, where there was a person who had a store, and there was a customer that came in, and they had a big credit that was outstanding, and the person who was the owner of the store said, well, I keep a very, very careful ledger, and therefore I'm like Chenvani Alpinkoso, who has a very reliable records, and the person should have to pay everything that I've registered. That's not really what Chenvani Alpinkoso means. Tzitz Eliezer points out, but there was another aspect to the claim, which is that the person said, yeah, I owe some of the money, but I don't know all the money. So that sounds a lot like modeh b'mitzvos, right? Q is that the person missed a little bit, so therefore the chayef. So say, take a look at the third the paragraph from the Tzitz Eliezer. So he says, your modeh b'mitzvos, your chayef shvua d'oraisa. You're my bezdin, you got to take a shvua d'oraisa. What am I going to do, though? I don't really administer bati din. That's the problem. Vatovas reitana gamtara tanas bari. And the storekeeper had an absolute certain claim. So if they had an absolute certain claim, there's such a thing as a certain claim, Tainus Bari, and a Shema claim. I think, maybe, Shema, maybe you owe me the money, maybe you don't owe me the money. That's not going to be strong enough in order to be Mechayev Shvua. But here, the person had a Bari claim. They were absolutely sure of themselves. And the other individual is Modeh b'mitzvos. So he says, oh, so then we really require a Shvua. And otherwise, the person will have to pay all the money, but they have to take a Shvua. So then, look at the last paragraph of the Tzitz Eliezer. Ulam! There's a certain discretion, and he's utilizing the words of the Shulchan Aruch now to say this is our halakha psuka. The Bezdin, once we pass it, even like the Shach against the Bach, that even when a decision has already been handed out by the Dayanim, they have the right to say, oh, so-and-so would have had to take a Shvua. Instead of the person taking a Shvua, we're just going to translate that, we're going to convert that into an amount of money that has to be paid instead. Could they be part of their own Shvua so that there won't be this fearsome punishment of Shvua hovering in the air? He says, so therefore, so he says, therefore, and this is the practice that we see, and this is why it's so important to figure out how are we going to monetize this pesher. Is it just that we discount by one third? Does it depend case by case basis, various considerations? So he says that's what we should do. So then the question is, well, how much do you adjust? How much do you adjust? So says it's Sicily answer, I'll tell you how much. Take a look in the various poskim. We begin by Apshara Bezeh Ayev Piskei Tshuva, where he quotes the Shus Yaakov, the Chayin, and take a look in the Divrei Malkiel. So when you look in the Piskei Tshuva, you'll see the Shus Yaakov, where it's a little confusing. Is it one third? Is it more fungible than that? And then the Divrei Malkiel tells you, yeah, you know what? It really is more fungible than that. The Divrei Malkiel says that there are really three different criteria that you look at with respect to how you're going to administer a Pshara, even in a Shvua type of situation. He says, number one, how much is it worth to a party to be exempt from a Shvua? Exactly like we were saying before in the Shvus Yaakov quoted by the Piskei Tshuva. Is the person somebody who really is getting a very good deal because I'm letting them off the hook from having to take a Shvua? You got to take that into account. And also he says, how credible is the party? You got to look at, the two sort of go together. But he says it also is subjective because maybe a person is very credible, but it's also clear that it's worth a lot to them to not want to have to take a shvuah. Because they're a credible person, but they're also an incredible person, in the sense that they're very, very righteous, and that they really wouldn't want to take a shvuah under any circumstances, so therefore it's going to be worth money, more money for them. Thirdly, he says that whenever we're dealing with pshara, pshara generally allows for an adjustment of up to 50%. He says not just one third, but allows for a pshara of even up to
50%. The more honest you are, the more you're going to be.
Well, he says, well, yeah, it's true. If you're looking at it along these lines, 100%. And then he said, and then it's also possible if you look at the words of the Shvus Yaakov. The Shvus Yaakov said Reuven was really upset that he was penalized so much, and Shimon wasn't penalized at all. It could be that it could be even more than 50% in certain cases when the Beis Din sees that a real avla, that's a real travesty of justice, is going on. If they're going to allow the person who otherwise would have been administering the shvuos to be able to collect so much more of their money because of the fact that the other person is not going to be allowed to take a shvuot. But yes.
They're making this discount is to not allow him to take a shvuah. It has nothing to do with the case itself. That the only issue that the Beis Din is interested is, okay, if we let him off from the shvuah, what's it worth? I mean, there's no other consideration?
No, well, there is the consideration, as we mentioned, how credible is that party altogether? That's what we said. If a person seems to be very credible, even without taking a shvuah, so maybe we'll say that we're going to view it as if they took a shvuah, and therefore they'll get the full benefit, or close to the full benefit, of taking the shvuah anyway. We don't want people to game the system. We don't want people to game the system. That's an important theme. I'm sorry, go ahead, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I think what he's trying to say is, if the case looks like, you know, X should have won, wouldn't that go into account about the fact that you would, your shvuah would be worth less to send out to take it, because the guy probably was right in the first place.
Right, absolutely.
So it's not just the shvuah that's determining what the settlement.
That's definitely one of the parties. Take a look at one of the factors that we take into account with respect to the parties. Take a look at the Igros Moshe, source Chav Gimel. Okay, the Igros Moshe talks also about how do we monetize a shvuah, an exemption from a shvuah. So look at about four lines down the Igros Moshe, the first paragraph as we go towards the bottom of page 8. That if it's clear to the Dayan that the person not really wanting to take a shvuah is because the person really is guilty, so then he says that we would definitely allow the other person to be able to collect, you know, the full amount. But then he says that we can't always necessarily come to that conclusion. So when, in his particular case, without going into all the details of his case, this was somebody who was a watch person, who had an envelope, they lost the envelope, and the person who gave them the envelope said, oh, I had the Maltese Falcon in that envelope. I had like the most precious possible diamond, emerald, whatever, it's like an emerald that was inside of that envelope. But Moshe said, we can't necessarily say it's the case, so we're gonna make up show. So take a look at the top of page 9. So Moshe says, he says, I don't know what the Dayanim do 100%. I don't have all those farm. Whether it makes a difference, because it's a type of shvuah where you get off the hook, a type of shvuah where you collect. About kimadumeni shenogin the pasha minikoshlish. But he says, I get the impression that people just do this one third thing. He said, that's the impression I get. Be'ashua be'nitro be'noto, but kimen shameless then mako godum gemara poskim rishonim, ain't saying in muklot rakofi rosin and dying. But he says, there's no clear makor, so therefore you need a lot of judicial discretion, right? Keep it from him. Sometimes it's clear that the person is a complete liar. Like we started out saying, was that circle partially ten yosef? And then the person who doesn't have to take a shvuah would have been a liar anyway had he taken a shvuah, so he has to pay more money. And sometimes it's clear that the Tobeya believes the Nippa, but he wants to impose a shvuah upon him because he knows that the Nippa is not going to take a shvuah. Maybe he won't let him take a shvuah. And then it's going to end up, it's going to end up being a pshara. So then he says that the pshara shouldn't be as much money because then the person is just gaming the system. You come up with claims because you figure you'll be able to get more by asserting the claim. Where do we see that this is something which is very problematic from the standpoint of halacha? Look at source kapei, which is the Gemara in Shvuas and Daf Lamed Aleph and Aleph. How do we know that if you feel a person owes you $100, you shouldn't say, I'm going to take him to Beis Din and I'm going to claim $200. Because you know what happens? He's like, I'm going to claim $200. How much is the guy going to admit? He's going to admit $100. And then he'll have to take a shvuah because there'll be a motive to mix us. Then we'll make some sort of pshara. We'll make, you know, and I'll be able to collect more money with the rest. Then I'll be able to get him to take more shvuah, so maybe pay more money as a compromise. So So based on this, it's like Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg said, a person goes to Bezin, the Bezin is going to decide according to Pshara. They're going to split the baby in half anyway. I feel this guy owes me $100, so I'll come to Bezin and I'll claim $200. They'll say, oh, make a Pshara, just, you know, collect your $100. This way I'll get my entire claim. So as Zalman Nechemya says, you're not allowed to do it. He quotes the Gemara in Shmuel. It says, you're not allowed to game the system. So Moshe says that you see that somebody is trying to game the system, so he says that you're not allowed to do. So that the Bezin has to be very, very careful about. Now, it's a very interesting Mishael Sechuvos of the Evan Yekara, but Binyamin Aryeh Cohen Weiss, who is an Abezin in Chernovitz, and he says, where do we come up this idea of one-third? That the Divrei Malkiel really says was made up. It was sort of a misreading of the Shvus Yaakov. He says, where do we have the idea of one-third? We have the idea that you're supposed to spend up to one-third in Hidur Mitzvah, when you're trying to enhance the Mitzvah. So he says, remember, go back to what I mentioned in terms of the Rambam. The Rambam said, sometimes it's a Mitzvah, right? To take a shvuas emes, sometimes it's a mitzvah, and the pashup shot of the Rambam is that at least in certain circumstances, when certain conditions have been satisfied, it really seems to be a mitzvah to take a shvuah. So he says you have to counterbalance that. What's the counterbalance? The counterbalance is that sheyesh b'midi det. It must be. Why is it a mitzvah according to the Rambam? Because it's a kiddush Hashem. You're invoking the name of God for the sake of asserting truth in this world, right? Truth and justice in this world. So if it's a Kiddush Hashem, so he says, what's a hidden mitzvah here? A hidden mitzvah would be if you make a bigger Kiddush Hashem. What's a bigger Kiddush Hashem than taking a Shavuah? A bigger Kiddush Hashem than taking a Shavuah is not taking a Shavuah. So he says that Ve'al Kochenu Sheish B'min Yasa, if you're not taking a Shavuah, this is the bold part towards the end, there's a Kiddush Hashem Yaser, Sheyireimanu Acharedim, because we're so scared and petrified of using a Kaddish Baruch Hu's name in vain, Laskiras Hashem Afilu Al Emes, even if it's such for truthful purposes, so therefore that's a hidden mitzvah, because that's a bigger Kiddush Hashem. And it says, the Gemara Baba Kama Daf Tes, the hidden mitzvah Ad Shlish, and the hidden mitzvah is up to one third. So he says, that's where we get the idea of the one-third adjustment. So to the extent that anybody does go along and stick to the one-third adjustment, this is a great explanation that we see from the Evan Yekara. So just moving on along, so Rav Avram Sherman, this is source from Zion, at the bottom of page 9, so he was dealing with a particular case, and there was somebody who would have been obligated to take a shvua, and this guy couldn't wait to take a shvua. So he says, something's wrong over here. The guy can't wait to take a shvua. You know what this guy is? He's a Ratzach of shvua. This guy is running to take a shvua. We can't let him take a shvua, right? So therefore he says, Maskaras Adram Ma'aka Shenitba Omeid Al Daito Shlo Lasis Muma Edel Ishav Shvua Chamura Yesh Laduno Karatzach of shvua. So we're not going to allow the person to take the shvua altogether.
Wouldn't you ever think sometime that somebody's just anxious to do it for the purpose of getting the truth out? It's the only way I can get the truth out.
Yes, you're 100% right. And that's why this one of the considerations that you have to look at, you know, is whether the truth appears to be with this person anyway. But he's saying maybe in a case where it's half-half or uncertain, or maybe it appears even in the other direction. And he says, especially if our practice is that we're so much against shvuas, the guy is such an eager beaver to take a shvuah. So he says that itself is a little bit suspicious. So he says, sometimes the practice of what they did is even to require pshara. Nowadays, that's a big question. That also is a machlokas between the Bach and other parties. The Bach says, sometimes we actually, even if the parties say no pshara, that they don't want there to be any kind of a compromise, we say, well, we're going to force you to take a pshara because you can afford it. The Bach says, especially for rich people, like rich organizations and things like that, he says they could afford it. And others say, what kind of, that's not the way Jewish justice is supposed to work, exactly, that we discriminate against somebody because they happen to be wealthy. So that's a little bit questionable. But he says, given that, number one, sometimes there is an opinion that we can even compel a pshara in certain circumstances. So he says, even though we hold that it may not necessarily be the case that we don't do it, like if parties say they don't want a pshara, one party says they don't want a pshara, so we say, okay, we have to decide according to strict din. He says, look at the top of page 10. He says, that's when I'm dealing with ben adam l'chavero. But he says, it's a kal v'chomer, that certainly we should require a pshara, b'pshara l'shvua, because b'pshara l'shvua is not ben adam l'chavero. It's not making peace between Reuven and Shimon, between one person and another person. You know making a pshara on a shvua is? It's making peace between us and a Kaddish Baruch Hu. So he says, b'shara l'shvua, shen yara shalom in adam l'makom. So then we're really going to require people to take a shvua, to make a pshara as opposed to taking a shvua. Now, is it the case that we never ever do a shvua? So the truth of the matter is we sometimes administer a shvua. I do it in the Bezdin, okay? Not in the Choshen Mishpah cases where Reuven is bringing a case against Shimon. When do I administer a shvua? When there's a get.
somebody's doing a get, and then they appoint the shliach and they leave the room, and it might be 2 weeks later when the shliach, the agent, is going to deliver the get to the wife. You know what I need the husband to do in those 2 weeks? I need him to do absolutely nothing. I need him to make sure he is not going to cancel the agency of the shliach. So how is it that we assure that the husband is not going to be mischievous, okay, or do a mice or issues, do something wicked during this time, and cancel? Should we make him take a shvuah? That's what Shulchan Aruch says. It's Paskin Shulchan Aruch. He says, "Shleah get biyashliach tovu shiashibiyah ba b'shvuah satorah shaloyim sam modah b'shalo yivatzal get." We make him take a shvuah, not just any shvuah, not just a general chayrim midoy, whatever. Say a shvuah satorah. We have the husband take a shvuah satorah. The most common. Why? Because when we're dealing with aguna situations, that's a totally different consideration. Even when I have one shliach who appoints a second shliach, I have a shliach here in Chicago who's appointing a shliach in California to deliver a get to a woman in Los Angeles, the shliach has to take a shvuah chamur. Not even the husband getting divorced. Just this poor shliach who got, you know, himself into this mix. He also has, I had one fellow who was, he would often be a shliach. I remember when there was a rabbi in New York, he said, "Do I really have to take a shvuah?" I said, "Yeah, you betcha, you gotta take a shvuah." "Why do you take a shvuah?" I said, "I understand. That's admirable. You don't want to take a shvuah." But in order to reassure an aguna, or to assure that there won't be an aguna situation, so then we're going to require shvuahs. But Yoezer Ariel, Dini Morris, this is source Lama Base, he gives an interesting explanation. He says, it could be that maybe the reason is, why is it that we don't generally allow for shvuah? No, not generally allow for shvuah because we don't trust people so much nowadays. It's not as much Yosef Hashem. People aren't going to be so medactic or whatever. People, if you're the chashid amamon, maybe nowadays the vil yoch chashid shvuah, etc., etc. We don't want to extinguish the pamaya shamala. This is with respect to things that happened in the past. That maybe people won't be so honest 100%. But he said that there's nothing that is being said falsely right now with respect to a commitment in the future. And that's in different words, Eliav Shulkerman, Professor Eliav Shulkerman, also when he wrote up his article on this subject in his famous work, Seder Adin. So he wrote that there's a difference between when the Shvuah is serving as a raya, as a proof of that which happened in the past, and when it's a hiskaibus. We do require Shvuah sometimes as a hiskaibus, for a person to do a particular thing, or limanos me'asiyas ma'isa, or to commit not to do a particular thing. Kigon Shvuah shlo lebatzel get, that's something which still has a proper place in the Bezdin, the same way that the Bezdin has to evaluate what is the monetary worth for a person to avoid taking a shvuah. Bezdin also has to evaluate when is it absolutely necessary to pull out that tool and to require a shvuah in certain situations in order to uphold the integrity of the Torah. So we should all be zochah that we should reaffirm that certainly the shvuah that we took at Har Sinai and Naaseh Mishvah as we celebrate the Chag Shavuos. Everyone should have a Chag Sameach.
Very nice. Good.